Remaker's Mark, Episode 37, The Court Jester. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in Episode 37, where we are discussing the screwball comedy classic, The Court Jester. With, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight, and what is a favorite holiday treat of yours?
I am imposterific.
Ooh.
And my favorite holiday treat is a cookie that my mom makes that I've always called a bonbon. I've also heard it called a Buckeye.
Yes.
It's essentially peanut butter dipped in chocolate. And
that is a great one.
It's a little ball of magic.
Yep. Sure is. So.
Is that the one with the Hershey star in the middle of it?
You take that blasphemy out of here.
Okay. That's a peanut butter cookie. This is actually kind of like rolled up peanut butter.
No, I know what you're talking about, Jared, because my mom makes those too, and those are also delicious. Yep. But no, okay. this is a self-contained little morsel of heaven, really, is the only way to describe it.
And yep. I determine a cookie success by were you to put it out on a cookie sheet and then let it sit there for an appropriate amount of time to cool or whatever and then pick it up. How greasy does the cookie sheet look? This one is like super high on the greasy cookie sheet scale. It's just like really, really buttery and awesome.
And another good test is if you put it on an assorted tray of cookies and then walk away for 5 minutes and you come back, are there any left? Chances are there will not be any left.
Yes, that is the ultimate test. Agreed. Very good. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you tonight, and what is a favorite holiday treat of yours?
I'm quacktabulous, and my favorite treat is the Krumkake.
Mmm, nice.
Lovely. Come again?
And my neighbor is making some that I'm picking up tomorrow.
Oh, snap.
Nice. Awesome.
Yep. Is that a Swedish thing?
Mark, he was talking about Krumkake.
Right, cream cake?
Oh.
Yes, crumb cake.
Crumb cake?
It's Scandinavian for cake of crumbs.
Or kaka.
It's a flat powdered sugar on it, very crumbly, very delicious.
You eat yours flat, Jer? You don't eat it in a tubular form?
Well, there's two. Maybe I'm thinking, I'm combining two different excellent cookies, but one is rolled into a funnel. Which is what we were talking about. And then there's another one that's actually made with a tiny little waffle iron.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
That's the one that I've had mostly. Yep.
They're both outstanding. Pizelles is the common name for the other one, the waffle iron one.
The funnel is often served filled with whipped cream, and it is fantastic.
I haven't done that.
Ooh. It's like a Swedish cannoli.
It's awesome.
Mm. Oh, nice. That does sound
That's
hungry.
The name of our metal band, Swedish cannoli.
I'm in. I'm totally in.
Saddest Lee, mafia ever.
Lee Hodor, how are you doing this fine evening? And what is a favorite holiday treat of yours?
I'm wonderful. And my mom always makes caramel puff corn, which people can't seem to stop eating. So it's good that she makes a lot of it.
Nice.
Nice.
Could you possibly bring some of that always to whatever you go to that I'm at? Because that sounds awesome.
I should try and make some for Saturday.
That would be wonderful. I would not turn that down, nor would I probably share.
I may save a second batch of Krumkake for Saturday too.
There we go.
Yes. Awesome. Mm. We are all getting together except for Mark, who will be at a wedding in Milwaukee, so we will miss him greatly. But Andy will be in town this Saturday. We're not just talking about having a like internet cookie social, although I like that idea a lot.
I'm not opposed to that either.
No, I think we can make that work. Mark, how are you tonight, and what is a favorite holiday treat of yours?
I'm great, thanks. And one of my favorite holiday treats goes back to when I was working in a French bakery. And there's a French tradition in around the holidays of making a thing called a galette de roi. Pardon my French, because it's not good, but the pastry is good, delicious. In fact, it's in English it's called a king's cake, but it's delicious pastry filled with delicious almond paste, and it's delicious.
Good one. Boy, I want that right now. That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes, please. My name is Kyle Delahunt. I will be your host once again this fine evening. And a favorite holiday treat of mine, a Buckeye is way up there. There's a peanut butter crispy treat that my mom makes that I really like. But the one that I keep coming back to is a kind of a coconut swirly. It's just, you know, coconut held together with sugar and stickiness and then has dark chocolate drizzled over the top of it. And it is freaking magical. I love it.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Yep. It's one that I can never get enough of for good or bad because then I eat a whole metric ton of them. So, yep. So excited about that. This is tying into, we're recording on the 23rd, so we're going to be coming up on the holiday season. This won't, 23rd of November. Thanksgiving will be just down the road, and this won't release for a few weeks. But, you know, it's holiday season around these parts for lots of folks. So good times.
We'll all be about 10 pounds heavier by the time this episode is released.
Indeed. Okay, so now before we dive into the court jester, we want to do a quick Remaker's Mark recommend segment. And Jer, since this is your pick, why don't you take that away?
Thank you, sir. I have not been able to put down the new Rat-A-Tat album, Magnifique.
Yes.
Oh, good call.
Yes.
It has been basically playing nonstop at my house for a month. It came out earlier this year. If you haven't listened to Rat-A-Tat, that one and Classics are my two favorites.
I really like the first album.
Yeah, me too. Those three are my favorite by far.
I'm not even sure how many more they have besides that. But holy cow, you can just put this on and it is background. It is perfect background noise.
Yeah, it's like Nintendo synth pop rock.
Yeah, yeah. I always described it as hip hop beats with Nintendo guitars.
Yes. Wait,
there you go.
That's perfect.
Yep. The not title track, but sort of the main track of the new one, which is called Cream on Chrome, is just so good. It's so easy to listen to, and I can't not dance around a little bit when I hear it.
Yeah. It's a really good record. The last couple had gotten a little monotonous for me, like they hadn't kind of diversified. And this album has a lot of influences, some Eastern influences, some kind of just different things that aren't just their own thing. And I think it's all the better for it. So, yeah, good call.
According to Google, they're called Rocktronica, which is kind of a cool word.
That's kind of
cool. I dig that. I can do that. I can work with that. Nice. Good recommendation, Jer.
Thank you.
I'll see if we can throw some in there for folks to listen to. All right, so now moving on to our discussion of the court jester. This in part one, we'll be doing recasting. But before we do that, Andy, do you want to do a quick summary of the film and our history with it?
I would love to. The Court Jester was released in 1955 and directed by Melvin Frank and Norman Panama, who were perhaps more well known as the screenwriting partnership behind White Christmas and many others. The film stars Danny Kaye as Hubert Hawkins, a hapless helper to the Black Fox's troop of freedom fighters, as well as featuring Glynis Johns, Angela Lansbury, and Basil Rathbone, among many others. So many pairs of skinny legs, and so many pairs of tights. Hubert Hawkins bumbles his way into the court of the imposter King Roderick, as the imposter Giacomo, the King of Jesters, and the Jester of Kings. Hypnotism, hijinks, and hilarity ensue.
There was so much alliteration in that. That was astounding.
Nice work.
Yeah, nice work.
Well, thank you. Tucson talk would be a better way to say that. Jer, this was your selection. I was not familiar with this movie before, although I have been a big Danny Kaye fan for a while. Tell us about why you chose this movie.
Well, as far as my history, I do distinctly remember watching this with my parents as a kid, which would have been elementary school at some point, probably on TV, like PBS or something. But I remember enjoying it then and then kind of losing touch with it for a while until high school when, later high school into early college, when I realized that I could actually turn my innate clumsiness into comedy with the proper training. And so I would watch things like Danny Kaye movies and Dick Van Dyke and some of the other, and then our modern day Chris Farleys and so on. to learn how to bumble my way through life. And I've been doing it ever since.
And it's worked out pretty well for you.
It's been working out so far. But yeah, I refound it back in late high school and college and absolutely loved it. And then I had a roommate that a lot of you guys know, Chad, who is also a big fan of Danny Kaye and Bing Crosby and that era of movie. And he also loved it. And so we'd watch it occasionally together. And so it's kind of been in that comedy pantheon of mine for most of my adult life. So I have just always loved what it is and just how stinking funny it is. And I'm so glad that none of you had seen it. And as far as I know, all love it now.
Yeah, this kind of became a an unexpected bonus for shame, which is pretty great.
I think when we met last time to talk about planning, not everybody had seen it then, right?
I think I had seen it by the time we did pre-production for this one.
Yeah, I had seen it then. Yep.
Okay.
But I had only just recently
Mark
seen
Lee,
it.
Mark and Lee, did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm so happy 4/5 of us loved it.
It was okay. And I can see why it would be, you know, like a comedy classic. And Danny Kaye is excellent. So that's
cool. All right, so now let
Lee
us...
Lee didn't hate it.
That's all right.
Five
we
stars.
We all have our own opinions. 5 stars. Now, as usual, in part one, we do our recasting of the film, and we will start with the first of two major characters, that of Maid Jean. Maid Jean is a confusingly named character in that she is not at all a maid. Rather, she's a soldier who is forced to go undercover with Hawkins in a plan that can be described as convoluted at best and as what at worst. She's a strong female character, but she's not afraid to go for a roll in the hay when the opportunity presents itself. So this character kind of goes all over the place in a way that I thought was actually really great. First thing you see her, she's kind of the lead of the Fox's troops, right? Kind of the sheriffs of sorts. I don't really know what the exact title was. Anybody?
Doesn't he call her lieutenant or captain? Yeah,
captain,
at one point.
Yes. So kind of captain of his troop. So, you know, she's an authority figure and people treat her as such. So she has to be strong in that regard. And then she kind of goes undercover with Hawkins. And then the next scene, other than them being on the road where there's some comic foil, but mostly on Hawkins' side of things, is them kind of, you know, being romantic with each other. So it goes from like this very strong character to having to be very soft and very personable and sort of, you know, wanting to kiss him, but sort of resisting. And it, you know, her character goes all over the place. There is certainly some comedic aspects to it too. So I wanted somebody that could do all of that. And I, you know, there are certainly a lot of actresses that can do that, but the one that really stuck out to me is Lake Bell. I think she is fantastic. I think she's an incredible talent. And I think she can lead movies. I think she can be really strong. I could see her being that strong captain type, and I can see her being really soft and kind of the roll in the hay side of things. So, yeah, I think she is awesome. You would know her from In a World, probably most likely. You would know her as the narrator of the most recent iPhone commercials, which are pretty great, and lots of other things too. But she's really talented. So Lake Bell is my pick.
I like that pick. She is really, really talented.
Yeah.
She's got a great presence too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think she's pretty badass, but it's not in a way that's like super tough. She's just got like a good strength and presence to her.
The thing that's I think really impressed me with her was the series Children's Hospital.
Oh,
where,
yeah.
Where she is a standout presence. She's super, super funny.
Nice. Yeah, she's pretty hilarious. She did a great interview with Marc Maron on WTF that I really enjoyed. I'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, I heard that one too. It was a good discussion.
Yeah, indeed. Jer, on to you. What is your pick for Maid Jean?
Similar to you, I was looking for somebody that could kind of cover the range, be the straight man when you needed to be the straight man against your wackiness of Hubert, but also can be strong enough to hold your own when the time came for that. And so I went with Rashida Jones.
Nice.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
Okay. From Community and
bunch of
other
right?
things. What's that?
Did you say Community?
It's Parks and Rec, not Community. Okay. Similar.
Okay. And The Office.
Similar but different.
Same channel.
Yep, and The Office. She was the, wife in I Love You, Man, which was a movie that I liked more than most people, apparently, because nobody talks about it anymore. She's just kind of all over the place these days. But she, I think she's got, she's one of those people that's funny without being, like, there's comedians who are like Kristen Wiig who are just obnoxiously funny. And I say that as a compliment, but, and then there's people that are a little bit more slyly funny. And I think Rashida Jones is a little bit quieter funny, with her facial expressions and how she delivers lines, as opposed to being so outlandish.
She does straight person funny really well.
Yes.
Yeah, she does.
Like, just playing off of the other actors, kind of funny.
That's very well put.
I think this movie needs about 10 of those. I mean, that's basically what the original was plopping Danny Kaye down with 10 straight men to play against in different ways.
Yeah, too many of those would detract. Yep.
So, yeah, Rashida Jones is my pick.
Good one.
And now I pass it on to Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, I also wanted to pick an actress that could cover the range. She needs to be strong, but you know, she needs to soften up as well. And I was really keying in on the, I guess, the slyness, because, you know, she works for the Black Fox. So that kind of foxy. And then also attractive foxy. more than anything else, I really just wanted to pick a top-notch actress. Somebody with just outstanding acting skills. And so I picked Bryce Dallas Howard.
Ooh.
Nice.
Very cool.
I, for some reason, a redhead freaks me out a little bit in that role. Maybe it's just that the original is like a strong brunette. Yeah. No, she wasn't a redhead, was she?
No, she was. She had black hair.
She's brunette. Yeah, yeah. Dark brunette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark's pretty colorblind, though.
That's true.
It's true.
He's brunette, redhead, colorblind. It's weird. It's rare.
It's really rare. But other than that, I really like it. And it's not a bad thing. It's just like I see the character as such a brunette in my mind.
You need to be colorblind too, Kyle.
All right. I'll do my best.
Free your mind and the rest will follow.
Yeah.
Aww, I love En Vogue.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my pick for Maid Jean is Bryce Dallas Howard. How about you?
Well, this is one character that I really found interesting and I really liked. I wanted someone for pretty much the same reason that everyone else has mentioned. So I picked Imogen Poot.
Nice.
She's a British actress. And the one thing that I really know her from was an independent movie called A Long Way Down, where she plays kind of a sort of a loose cannon type character who's maybe a little disturbed and suicidal, which is maybe not a great barometer for this role. But when I was kind of looking for someone to play this character, I remembered that role and just like the range that she had. And that's what I wanted for this role. So.
Well, that's the one where people meet on the roof.
Yeah.
Right. To kill themselves and they kind of create a community.
Pierce Brosnan, Toni Collette, and Aaron Paul are all in that.
Got it. Okay. I remember the trailers for that, but I never saw it.
Yeah. It's on Netflix now. I enjoyed it. I like it a lot. So it's worth checking out.
It's from a Nick Hornby novel. That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
But nice.
Yeah. Imogen Poot.
Poots, actually.
Poots. Yeah. Sorry. But Andy is next.
These are all great picks, but I went with Elizabeth Banks, and I win.
Ooh, such confidence.
I know. I like it.
Tell us more.
I'm just going to try to kind of run with this. I like the straight person versus Danny Kaye's kind of, live wire comedy, and it needs that for sure. And I will admit I'm very much channeling Elizabeth Banks' vocal performance in the Lego Movie because I think she played a very similar role in the Wild Style character.
Totally.
So she can do it. I think she's hilarious. I think she can be that very straight performance and still come across as very, very funny. I recently heard an interview with Carol Burnett. I believe it was on Here's the Thing.
Mm-hmm. That was a great one.
When Alec Baldwin once again kept interrupting his guests, but still, great interview. And Carol Burnett described the difference between a comic actor and a comedian? And a comedian says funny things, but a comic actor says things funny.
Yeah.
And I describe Elizabeth Banks that way. I think she says things funny. And even if she's not, if it's not really coming across very obviously as this is a joke, she's going to make you laugh when she says it. I like that she could be, I feel like she could have the presence of a kind of a military commander in this silly little band of merry men and women, but then still want to roll in the hay.
Totally.
Roll in the hay.
Roll in the hay.
I was wondering when that was going to come out.
I would have a little bit of a harder time with the captain portion of it with her, but I think everything else as the foil, as a sort of additional comic presence would be right on.
Wild style Kyle. Ooh, wild style Kyle. I like
wild
it.
Style Kyle.
Oh, I will refer you to Kyle. Wild style Kyle.
That is a good reference. I like that. And I just love that, like you said, the character, what do you say? The wild character, wild style? What do you, I don't know what you ever said, but it just cracked me up. Just love that, like, you can say wild style, and it's like, oh, yes, of course, wild style. Like, wild that's just the style. Most normal thing in the world. Like, you're talking about Jane Austen or something. Love it.
Have any of you guys watched the Netflix mini series, the Wet Hot American Summer prequel?
No,
not yet.
I've heard I'm a couple episodes into that.
Yeah, me too.
Elizabeth Banks is in it as a reporter that goes undercover as a teenager.
Yeah, awesome. I love that. What does she do? She like puts her hair up in a scrunchie, and then all of a sudden, everybody mistakes her for a teenager.
Yeah, everybody in the office is like completely blown away. She side ponies her hair or something.
Awesome. Nice. Good picks. Thank you. The role of Maid Jean, originally played by Glynis Johns. What a name that is, Glynis Johns. Mm-hmm. Man,
it's Captain Maid Jean.
Captain Maid Jean, thank you. I went with Lake Bell. Jer went with Rashida Jones. Mark went with Bryce Dallas Howard. Lee went with Imogen Poots. And Andy went with Elizabeth Banks. Our second and final major character is that of Hubert Hawkins, originally played by Danny Kaye. Boy, howdy. And Jer, tell us about Hubert.
Hubert Hawkins is our titular hero, equal parts heart, courage, nervous stammering, and klutztastic buffoonery. Hubert works for the Black Fox and is tasked with bringing the baby heir to safety and ends up impersonating Giacomo the Jester, foiling a dastardly plot, nearly marrying the king's daughter, and ultimately, spoiler, saving the day as only song and dance man Danny Kaye can.
That is only a portion of what happens in this movie.
That's about 20%.
Also, nicely said, Jer. That was a tough one to read.
Indeed. Well done.
So, before I made my picks, I had to decide, am I picking a musical or am I not picking a musical?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I decided I am picking a musical. I want this to be... Thank you. I want all of the song and dance, giant set piece numbers. And I mean, not that there was a ton of those, but enough that there was a musical quality to the movie. And Danny Kaye can use his God-given gifts of vaudevillian actor to its fullest. So I wanted somebody that could bring that to it. And I chose Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
Seems smart. Like a natural smart. Heir to that.
Mostly channeling a lot of the Joss Whedon project that is escaping my head right
Dr.
now.
Dr. Horrible?
Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, where he played Dr. Horrible and had plenty of musical numbers, and it was hilarious and awesome, and it would be the exact same thing, but even better.
Yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit about it in the second half here, but just looking at how much of a musical we would want it to be, and I think that this one is not as full-blown musical as, like, My Fair Lady, even, you know, but yeah, I think you kind of need to make that decision of, are you casting for... Well, or what are you casting for, right? Andy and I were IMing a little bit today, and he was saying, you know, I want to pick someone from Broadway, but I don't want a Broadway star per se. So it was kind of finding the balance in that, and I think that meets it very nicely.
Well, and most of the musical numbers are for Danny Kaye. I mean, there's not a lot that he's not involved in. So if you're going to pick a musical person, that's got to be the role that you got to pick. And everybody else can sort of get filled in with either musical or non-musical people. But the Hubert Hawkins role is where all of the main music came from.
Yep, totally.
Neil Patrick Harris.
In summation, NPH.
NPH. And now, Andy, who did you pick?
I one-upped you on this one, Jer.
You always do.
Because I chose Neil Patrick Harris.
Robot Neil Patrick Harris.
I picked Neil Patrick Harris from the future.
I picked Neil Patrick Harris for all the same reasons. I definitely wanted this to be a musical, and then that limited my choices in terms of who could fill these shoes, and not so much who could fill the shoes, but just who had the talent combination that Danny Kaye had in terms of being a song and dance man, a comedian, and an actor. And it's a really fine line to walk. And I think that Neil Patrick Harris could do 90% of this really well. There's a part of me that thinks that some of the physical comedy parts of it, like I'm thinking of some of the sword fight scenes that are really, even like they're very funny, but they're also very physical. Like there's a lot of accuracy that has to happen in these things, even if you are waving around a very bendy Hollywood set rapier, like you can still poke an eye out with one of those things. And there's a lot of choreography that has to happen. And I don't know if I've seen Neil Patrick Harris do a lot of that, but I've seen him do a lot of stuff in a song and dance kind of mode. I was thinking a lot about the Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, but I was also thinking about the time he hosted the Emmys, which I thought was really, really funny. And it showed a performance side of his that I hadn't seen before. That was a little more comedian, I think, versus How I Met Your Mother, something like that. And I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. So Neil Patrick Harris, better than Neil Patrick Harris.
Differently emphasized Neil Patrick Harris.
Therefore, better.
I actually think he could do all the physical stuff. I would have no worries about that. But I'm a little bit concerned about him coming off as dashing enough for this role.
Yep, I'm there with you.
I don't think I'm not worried about that because honestly, I don't think Danny Kaye was really all that dashing in this role. I think that there was a lot of blustering and hubris in this role that kind of had to come from, like, when he's pretending to be Giacomo, he had to pretend to be this jester of kings, but then also had to be, in the hypnotizing scenes when he had to kind of go back and forth from being Don Juan to Dave Juan, I guess. I don't know. That back and forth, I don't worry about Neil Patrick Harris being able to do that.
And holy cow, that's one of about a dozen of my favorite scenes in that movie. For Danny Kaye to go from this machismo warrior to this meek little mouse.
Back and forth.
And how he did it so cleanly and so comically was just great.
He was so good.
That's, I also can't wait for us to talk about the midget fight, but we'll get there.
Yes.
Folks, if I had a nickel for every time I've said that.
I'm going to need a drink before we get to that.
Lee, did you choose Neil Patrick Harris?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't choose Neil Patrick Harris either.
Oh.
I wasn't really thinking this in thinking of this in deference to musicals, but I was focusing more on the physicality that the role would require. So I picked Paul Bettany, who is also a very proper English actor and has an extensive resume. I'm thinking of, I guess, the roles that he had in A Beautiful Mind and also Dogville, and how those two roles are so different, and yet how they could, complement this type of performance. They're not super comedic, but I think he has the physicality to pull off a role like this.
I'm surprised you didn't reference that awesome movie with Heath Ledger where he played
Knight's Tale.
Chaucer. That's at a Nightstead.
Yeah. Yep. That's a great one.
I did not see that one.
Yeah. And he was very funny in that. I mean, very sarcastic funny, but.
He's the best part of that movie.
Yep. That's a good one.
I rather like Alan Tudyk in that one.
Oh, yeah. I almost picked him for this
one. Alan Tudyk in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. He's becoming a Remaker's Mark all-star.
Yes. He is indeed. Yeah, I like him as it's sort of a unsung role, but I like him as Jarvis in the Iron Man films. He's the voice of that.
Yeah,
I think he does very well there.
And the Avengers films.
Yeah, in the Avengers films. Yep, yep. And now Vision.
I saw a bumper sticker on the road the other day that said Jarvis is my co-pilot. Thought that was pretty funny.
Nice. Awesome.
But yeah, Paul Bettany was my pick. So
good one.
Moving on to Mark.
Thank you. Speaking of Avengers, I picked Tom Hiddleston.
Nice. Wow.
He's not an Avenger.
Nice.
Yeah, he's not an Avenger.
Speaking of Norse mythology.
Which I was to myself under my breath.
As you always do.
As I do. I don't know if I wanted a remake to be a musical. I don't actually know if Tom Hiddleston can sing, although I kind of would put money if I had it on yes, he can sing. But I don't have money, so nobody take that bet. But he can definitely bring the theater, if not the musical. He can be so expressive and all over the place as Danny Kaye was. And he is a scientist of an actor. I would trust him with pretty much any role. And this is a big role. And so I want us a way that can bring just big, big skill. And I think Tom Hiddleston definitely does that. And dashing.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Yep.
He's got that grin too. Like in spite of Loki, you know, I mean, Loki is a pretty good villain. He's just got like that smile that won't quit. So I could totally see
totally.
That.
Yeah. When he's not evil, he's just so charming.
He's so good. I think I agree with you about not knowing whether you can sing and that it doesn't matter at all. Even if he couldn't, like he kind of does the, like Danny Kaye does a lot of the, not a lot, a little bit of the Rex Harrison, like, I'm talking in notes, sort of, you know, like there's a lot of that sort of almost like rap, you know what I mean? Like it's pretty, it's like a really, yeah, speak singing. It's a lot of that really early kind of like before, you know, well before rap was a thing. But yeah, so I think Hiddleston could do that.
I think you probably can. And that is my pick, Tom Hiddleston. So Kyle, how about you?
I focused a little bit less on the singing side of it than I did on the rapid fire dialogue, because that to me was what stuck out most for that character was just the, I'll maybe try to put one in as the example for this character, or maybe you have already heard one in that case, but he just does so many of these things that are just absurd, but unbelievably funny, where someone says something and then he uses alliteration or rhyming or all of the above.
The Duke do.
Yes. And what about the Doge?
Oh, the Doge.
Yeah. Well, what did the Doge do?
The Doge do?
Yes, the Doge do.
Well, the Doge did what a Doge does. When a Doge does his duty to a Duke, that is.
What? What's that?
Oh, it's very simple, sire. When the Doge did his duty and the Duke didn't, that's when the Duchess did the dirt to the Duke with the Doge.
Who did what to what?
Oh, they all did, sire. There they were in the dark. The Duke with his dagger, the Doge with his dart, and the Duchess with her dirk.
Duchess with her dirk?
Yes. The Duchess dug at the Duke just when the Duke dove at the Doge. Now, the Duke ducked, the Doge dodged, and the Duchess didn't. So the Duke got the Duchess got the Doge, and the Doge got the Duke.
Curious. What? What's it? All I heard was that the Duchess had a siege of rheumatism. No. She's 83, you know.
Oh, come next summer, sir.
So's the Duke.
So's the Duke. Remarkable, those Italians, what?
So I focused a little bit more on that than I did on the singing side of it. And I went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt for that. I think his physical presence is great. We haven't heard from JGL in a while. That was someone that I think could do all of those things really well. I could see him bumbling very well. I think he's a really strong physical presence. If you think of something like Inception, like that hallway battle scene, I mean, he comes off as both graceful and strong in that scene. You know, he has to manage a rotating room. And we're like fighting someone at the same time. So I think he's got the battle chops. He's got the comedic chops. I think he's very personable. I could see him being a jester and a fighter. So he kind of just checked off all of the boxes for me. So good old JGL was my pick. Go wrong with JGL.
He was on my short list too.
Nice. Any umbrages?
Nope.
No, not really. I think he can do it.
He's excellent. Awesome.
Although yeah, awesome. I have heard him sing, and he's not Danny Kaye. He's not bad, but I mean,
he'll rap.
he'll do medieval hip hop.
He'll do the Hiddleston rap.
He definitely falls farther on the dashing scale. I haven't seen. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of physicality from him in the past, or at least recent past.
I totally think he can do it.
You wouldn't count, I'm sure. Inception as physicality? Yeah.
Or Looper?
In a way, I guess, but not in this way.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I would. He did have a guest spot on one episode of The Mindy Project with Mindy Kaling, and I think he definitely brought that presence.
He also just did a lip sync battle where he did Rhythm Nation by Janet Jackson, and he came out dressed as Janet in the Rhythm Nation era and did the entire dance thing. So, like, he's got it. He's all right. He's doing okay. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes because it was rad.
That clip was unbelievable. Yeah. Well, his first rap battle back when rap battles were just a thing on Jimmy Fallon. Mm-hmm. He and Jimmy Fallon were doing it. That's also quite good.
Yeah. Agreed. So for the role of Hubert Hawkins, originally played by Danny Kaye, both Jer and Andy went with Neil Patrick Harris, or Neil Patrick Harris, if you will. Lee went with Paul Bettany. Mark went with Tom Hiddleston, and I went with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Now we've got five minor characters. The first of those is Giacomo. Jer, tell us about Giacomo, and then maybe give a little Easter egg of what Giacomo means to this group in addition to this movie.
All right. Giacomo or whatever it was that they say, he is the king of jesters and jester of kings. He is a minor character that Hubert and Maid Jean encounter on the road to escorting the infant king to safety, and they end up knocking him out, and Hubert then impersonates him to get access to the castle and do all of the other things that end up happening in the plot. He is the guy that plays him, and I don't know anything else that he's been in, but he just plays him as this really sort of greasy, kind of pompous, full of himself entertainer. And so I wanted somebody that could play an entertainer, and I would love to give him a musical number, even though he didn't get one in the original number or in the original movie. And I'd love to see this character have maybe even kind of like a rap battle of sorts with Hubert in that scene or something.
Nice.
But I chose Jermaine Clement.
Yes.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Oh man,
that is amazing.
Equal parts. His character from Flight of the Conchords, but then he also, there's this movie that no one likes except me, and I say that far too much, I think, called Gentlemen Broncos. It was made by the same guy that made Nacho Libre and Jared Hess, Nacho Libre and Napoleon Dynamite, and it's about this kid who writes science fiction novels, and Jermaine Clement plays this science fiction author that steals his story. And he's just this totally full of himself, slimy science fiction writer who can't come up with any good ideas anymore. And he's just kind of this worm. And I want a little of that and a lot of Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords into Giacomo.
Nice.
God, boom, drops the mic.
I love it.
I love it.
And then for what Kyle was referencing, we have begun a tabletop role-playing Dungeons & Dragons-esque campaign, and I play a bard named Giacomo.
Named after this? Yeah, I'm assuming.
Named after this.
Funny. Good work.
Although I think my character is a little bit more Hubert than it is actually Giacomo.
You are really in between them, yeah.
We're splitting hairs at that point.
That's all right. It's good. Rounding it off.
Oh, so after Giacomo, we have Griselda. Mark, tell us of Griselda.
Originally played by Mildred Natwick, Griselda is Princess Gwendolyn's handmaid, and also a witch, which you would think overqualifies her for the position of handmaid. But since her witchcraft is mostly children rhymes, I guess I could see it. I wanted to bring a different sort of weight to the Griselda role than that with which Jer just bombarded us for the Giacomo role. I wanted the actress to have the capacity to make us honestly threatened by this witch. But you know, if the remake ends up going comedic as well, then I think she could really pull this off too. And that actress is Rachel Weisz.
Oh yeah,
I like it.
Hell yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I could see her being like, I could see the tell being that she starts off super scary and then tries to do something and totally fails and then is like, "Daggummit!" Or you know, like, or just something where like then it cuts or it breaks or something. You know, like yeah. she can play so intimidating.
Suddenly she goes 19th century prospector.
Yeah, she takes her
all peaches. I need to hear Rachel Weisz say that line at some time.
Yes, indeed. But she can do intimidating so well.
Barnacles!
And then to cut that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, she can be so scary. But she's just one of those actresses. She can pull off anything. And and I think she's got just really, really strong comedy in her, too. So I love that transition of this hypothetical transition for a remake. That, you know, she could be really scary at first, but then really, really funny.
Good call.
Thank you. Kyle, could you please tell us about King Groderick?
Sure. King Roderick, originally played by Cecil Parker. I'm assuming it's Cecil because he's British, is the king in this story. And you can tell because he rolls his R's extra super hard. He's not a bad guy, but he's not a good guy. And he's most definitely an extremely confused guy. He loves his daughter, but he sure has a funny way of showing it. This role was just sort of like, one of the only criticisms that I had of this movie is that it starts off seeming very much like a play. Like this, either the first or the second scene, I think, is set in a court, a king's court. And it's very much like you're just watching a very still camera on a still set. And it's all these people who are very British sounding very British. And I like that, but I wanted it to get away from that right away. And I thought one way that you could do that was to make this character a little bit more pompous. And for the utmost in pomposity, I decided to cast King Roderick as with John Cleese. I think he would be a perfect King Roderick. I think when he was pompous, he would be pompous. When he was confused, he would be extra confused. And then he would just vacillate between the two in a beautiful, amazing comedic way. So plus it's John Cleese. I mean, the dude can do anything. So yeah. John Cleese is my guy.
That's wonderful. That's a great pick.
Thank you. Next is Princess Gwendolyn. Andy, tell us about the princess.
I chose John Cleese too.
Good pick.
I did not, but I kind of wish I had. Pardon me. Princess Gwendolyn is the dark side of Angela Lansbury. She cares only for herself and is not afraid of threatening death to others who stand in her way. Murder, she wrote, indeed.
Nice.
Thank you. As I said, originally played by Angela Lansbury. For this one, I chose Aubrey Plaza.
Nice.
And I kind of wanted to play her character from Parks and Rec a little bit. Not to that extreme, but someone who is maybe a little less devious about her wanting to get her way and more of just a little more blunt about wanting her way. And when I really thought the relationship between Princess Gwendolyn and King Roderick was funny when he was saying things like, "You'll marry this other king," I guess, that was brought in. And she's simply like, "Nope, not going to do it." And King Roderick was just kind of flabbergasted and didn't really know what to say. And I think Aubrey Plaza would do that very well, especially to John Cleese.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this was actually an inspiration or not, but I just in my mind saw like sort of a in-between example of this between when this was made and today is Princess Vespa in Spaceballs. She's totally Princess Gwendolyn. Oh, I just thought of that. I'm like, oh my God, Daphne Zuniga could totally do Princess Gwendolyn.
Oh man, yeah, 30
years ago.
I thought of that one.
Yeah.
All right, Audible. Daphne Zuniga.
Yeah.
Time traveling Daphne Zuniga.
I almost picked Aubrey Plaza for the Maid Jean role because she looks so much like that actress.
Yeah.
She does look like Glynis Johns a little bit.
Yeah. But the energy wasn't quite right. So, yeah.
That's a good pick, Andy. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Like, I think she'll appropriately fill the, snotty yet strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Just kind of spoiled and immature, but very.
I'd love to see it played almost anachronistically of just this pouty teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Lee, tell us of Sir Ravenhurst.
Originally played by Basil Rathbone, which I think is a better villain name. hoping to win favor with the king, Ravenhurst suggests the plot to ensure Gwendolyn's marriage to Sir Clark W. Griswold. When this fails, he duels Hawkins in a climactic sword fight, which rivals Inigo Montoya versus the Six-Fingered Man.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I actually liked that sword fight scene. I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, me too.
But I wanted someone who plays a really good villain, so I picked Jude Law.
Ooh.
Nice.
Great Englishman and awesome villain, and can do it in a comedic way.
Yeah, that's some good devious right there.
Yeah.
Not as physically imposing, but a much more menacing sort of.
Yeah, just cold.
Yeah. Diabolical.
Yeah, Ravenhurst was so sniveling, I don't know, somewhere in between, snivelingy, that I think, Jude Law would smooth that out a little bit, and I think he could do very well with a saber. Saber!
Yeah, I think saber. So, too.
Nice, good one. I like that. All right, so that wraps up the minor characters, and with that, this first half of our discussion of the court jester. Our next episode will be released on December 21st, when we'll be discussing the plot and filmmaking changes we would make in our remake of this film. Remakers Mark is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. To find out more information about this podcast and other podcasts or blogs on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes for this episode and other podcasts here, where you will find links to actors, actresses, directors, movies, links, everything that we discussed in this episode, which is also attached to this podcast file. You can also check us out on Facebook or Twitter at username mathishardnet, so definitely hit us up there for information about what we're up to and to provide feedback about this episode or others. So, gentlemen, thank you. This was a good time. While we're not Danny effing K. can't resist. Good old Christmas vacation. Man. I think we did a pretty good job having a good time. So until the next time that we chat, may the force be with you.
And also with you.
Danny Kaye, no, I'm sorry. Danny Kaye is an actor who played Hubert Hawkins.
Did you just say Diddy Kaye?
P. Diddy Kaye, which is a very different actor.
You mean Diddy Kong?
Oh, boy.
Yep.